Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Esha Nityo Vyaya Sukshma.
Esha Nityo Vyaya Sukshma.
Esha Sarvashraya Sudrik.
Esha Sarvashraya Sudrik.
Atma Maya Gunair Vishvam.
Atma Maya Gunair Vishvam.
Atmanam Srijate Prabhu.
Atmanam Srijate Prabhu.
Translation: the living entity is eternal and imperishable because he actually has no beginning and no end. He never takes birth or dies. He is the basic principle of all types of bodies, yet he does not belong to the bodily category. The living being is so sublime that he is equal in quality to the Supreme Lord. Nonetheless, because he is extremely small, he is prone to be illusioned by the external energy, and thus he creates various bodies for himself according to his different desires. Purport: in this verse, the philosophy of achintya bheda bhed, simultaneous oneness and difference, is described. The living entity is eternal, nitya, like the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the difference is that the Supreme Lord is the greatest, no one being equal to or greater than him, whereas the living entity is sukshma, or extremely small. The Shastra describes that the magnitude of the living entity is 1/10,000th the size of the tip of a hair. The Supreme Lord is all-pervading. Andantarastha paramanu chayantarastham. Relatively, if the living entity is accepted as the smallest, there should naturally be inquiry about the greatest. The greatest is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the smallest is the living entity. Another peculiar characteristic of the jiva is that he becomes covered by maya. Atma maya gunaihi. He is prone to being covered by the Supreme Lord's illusory energy. The living entity is responsible for his conditional life in the material world, and therefore he is described as Prabhu, the Master. If he likes, he can come to this material world, and if he likes, he can return home back to Godhead. Because he wanted to enjoy this material world, the Supreme Personality of Godhead gave him a material body through the agency of the material energy. As the Lord himself says in Bhagavad Gita, Ishvara sarva bhutanam hridesh arjuna tishtati brahmayam sarva bhutani yantrarudhani mayaya. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. The Supreme Lord gives the living entity a chance to enjoy in this material world as he desires, but he openly expresses his own desire that the living entity give up all material aspirations, fully surrender unto him, and return home back to Godhead. The living entity is the smallest, sukshma. Jiva Goswami says in this connection that the living entity within the body is extremely difficult for materialistic scientists to find. Although we understand from authorities that the living entity is within the body is different from the living entity. So here we are in the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the topmost Vedic literature, and which ultimately describes the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, Prem Purushottam, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who enjoys the most loving pastimes, namely Lord Sri Krishna, of which the chapters describing the Rasa Lila are considered the, just like the smile of the Lord. This is the summum bonum of all knowledge and all Shastric information. Here we are in the sixth canto, more than halfway to the tenth canto, and we are discussing, or rather, Vyasadeva, Shukadev Goswami, they're discussing that we are not the body, as Srila Prabhupada has finished in his purport. The body is different from the living entity, which we may think is a very basic statement, and it is. This is the basic teaching of Bhagavad Gita. It's the basic teaching on which all spiritual knowledge rests. Spiritual knowledge means knowledge of reality, knowledge of what is the fact. The opposite of spiritual knowledge. Spiritual, that means vidya, and the opposite is avidya, maya, and that which is not. So here in this verse, and in the purport, it is discussed essential points that the living entity is not the body, but he identifies himself with the body, therefore he's an illusion and takes body after body, and he's different from the Supreme Lord Narayana. So this is being discussed here in the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam, and it's even discussed in the tenth canto of Bhagavatam. This is what we might consider as a very basic point. Can anyone think where that famous verse is? The tenth canto of Bhagavatam. Anyone can say? English or Sanskrit? That Krishna makes the point when he's speaking this to the sages at the sacrificial ceremonies performed by Vasudeva, that identification with the body is maya. Well-known verse in which such people are compared to asses and cows. Yasya atma buddhi. You can't say? Yasya atma buddhi kunape trithat, okay? Swati kalatradishu bhoma ijyati.
Yatirta buddhi.
Sa eva gokaraha. Krishna says there. Of course, the cow is a worshipable animal, the ass is not. But in terms of intelligence, the cow is not in the top league. So, people who identify with the body, yasyatma buddhi, those who think their self to be the body which is made of three elements, kapha, pitta, vayu. Or, further symptoms are described, yasyatma buddhi kunavira, swadhi, same thing, atma buddhi, swadhi, kalatra, dishubhomaj, that myself, I am the body, and then my wife, my home, my country, these are all wonderful. Who even is apparently very religious, but is not spiritually advanced because he goes to holy places, but not to take advantage of the real advantage, which is to hear from the self-realized soul staying there, but he goes to take a bath, to wash himself off of the sinful reactions which he's incurred, so that he can go on enjoying this material world better, without sinful reactions. So throughout the Bhagavatam, this is stated, this is the basis of spiritual knowledge, and we always have to see that our base is strong. Because if we go very high without a strong base, then the danger is just like a building. Base, foundations, the same thing. If the foundation is not strong, then you may build a very big building, but it will collapse. That saying is they're building houses in sand. If you build a house in sand, then it may be a very nice house, it may look very good, it may stand for some time, but not for very long. It's going to collapse. So throughout Bhagavatam, this point is being emphasized again and again. We are not the body, and as much as we identify with the body, that we are in maya, which means that which is not. And even if we amass various kinds of spiritual information and become very learned in Shastra, and we can describe about the different ages of the Manjari assistants to the Sakis and so many different things, if we don't have a strong base of understanding that we're not the body, that Maya is very powerful, Maya will always catch us at any moment, then despite all our advanced knowledge, we may end up as a cow or an ass very soon, or even worse. So let's discuss about Maya. We're supposed to discuss about Krishna in Bhagavatam class, but everyone in the world is discussing about Maya. But devotees, when they discuss about Maya so as to become free from Maya. Otherwise everyone is discussing. You're going to walk outside, maybe inside also. Various discussions are going on. But discussions, they should be in relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So when devotees discuss about Maya, that means not like the Karmis discussing that, well, what's on TV, who's getting married to who, who's getting divorced to who, and all these different things. But they discuss of the nature of Maya so as to be free from it, because Maya is very strong. Just like Prabhupada states here, the body is different from the living entity. It's a very, what we might consider in terms of spiritual knowledge, a very basic statement. But Prabhupada is making the point to make it right there in the sixth canto of Bhagavatam, because we need to hear it, because we are very much influenced by Maya. So let's say that again, Maya is very strong, because even though we've heard it many times, we think, well, Maya is very strong. Yeah, that's true. Okay, don't have to worry about it too much. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that if we surrender to Him, that we can overcome it. So I'm surrendered, so no problem. I can do whatever I like. And, no problem. Maya's not too tough like this. But Maya's very subtle. Here the word is given sukshma. This is referring to the living being as very small. And Maya's effect, it means subtle. But Maya's effect is also very subtle. The basic bond of Maya, the Maya ties everyone up with this kalata dishu bhoma injiti, starting with the wife and then extending to to griha kshetra sutata vitayam, that home, to griha kshetra, identification with the land or identification with a particular country, offspring, sons and daughters, money, friends, society, friendship, and love. This is Maya. So Maya is, her grossest manifestation is Pungsastriya mittuni bhava mitam tayora ho hridya grantima ho ho. The identity, body, identification with the body and attraction to other bodies, especially the male-female attraction, which when that's made solid, when the, we say when the knot is tied, that the, they say that in English, that's an English saying, isn't it? That when the knot is tied, that's in the Hindu marriage ceremony, is the tying of the knot. But it's a, that knot signifies the hridya granti, the knot on the heart, tightly tied up. So that's the grossest manifestation of Maya. But even those who are aware of this gross manifestation of Maya and are seriously endeavoring to overcome it, or who may have appeared to overcome it, there are many fine or very subtle attacks of Maya also in so many different ways. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has warned. What are the weeds growing in the heart? He's given some clues. Nishidacha kutinati jive hingsham lab puja pratishta jato upashakanga. The weeds that grow in the heart, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu warns that he's describing the lata, the creeper of devotional service that has to be watered by hearing and chanting, but he warns that there may be weeds within the heart which look like the bhakti lata. It looks like we're advancing in devotional service, but what's growing up is a big weed. It's not actually, it may look like the real plant, just like you see that we have tulsi and basil in English, the tulsi is called sacred basil, because the basil, which is just, it's a herb. Using pizzas, isn't it? Yes. So it looks the same, it looks very similar. So I heard many years ago in England that they used to be performing everybody basil worship, because it looks the same and they didn't know. Well, Hare Krishna. That's Maya. Maya means that example is given, the rope and the snake. That in the dark, you may see a rope and you think it's a snake. You accept one thing to be something else, but it's not. So that's called, there are so many different names. So there's Sarpa Raju Nyai, the logic of, or the understanding of the snake and the the snake and the rope. So this is, I guess that could be called Basil Tulsi Nyai, a misunderstanding. So one may mistake the actual creeper of devotion, a weed, which is not actually advancement. We don't think we're advancing in devotional service, but we're actually cultivating so many different weeds. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave some examples. Nishidacha. It means breaking the regulative principles. That behavior which is forbidden by Shastra. Nishidacha. So there may be so many people who are thinking that, yes, I'm performing devotional service very nicely, but they're breaking the regulated principles. And they don't think there's anything wrong with it. They think, well, it's all okay, what's the harm? I remember this was many years ago, I had some discussion with a devotee who was on a traveling Sankirtan party in West Bengal. You may know that in Bengal there are many people who are Vaishnavs. By birth, they're born in a Vaishnava family. They play mridanga very nicely, put on tilak, have neck beads, but they eat fish because, for whatever reason, they eat fish. So I was having an argument with this devotee who was not eating fish, but all his family members eat fish, and didn't want to say anything bad about his family members. So I was saying, this is very bad, and you say, no, what's wrong? All the Vaishnavas, I know, all in our guru eats fish, everything. What's wrong? They're chanting Hare Krishna. What do you know? They're chanting Hare Krishna since they were born. So they're born Vaishnava. What do you know? So this is an example. Nishidacha. The caste Goswamis who like to eat fish, they say that. Well, God is very merciful. Why will He condemn us for a minor thing like eating fish? What's that? He will forgive us. Surely He will forgive us. Now this is... to think that, well, we're chanting Hare Krishna, so what's the way we'll do simple activities? What's that? No, that is considered the greatest offense against the holy name. So nishidacha, kutinati, diplomacy, non-straightforward behavior. Straightforward and the opposite of straight is crooked. Crooked behavior. Diplomatic dealings. Of course, even in Krishna's service, there may be some diplomatic dealings, just like Prabhupada, when he was asked, how should we preach? So, Prabhupada said that you go to a person and say to him that, my dear sir, you are such a wonderful person, you are very great, there's no one in the world greater than you. And he thinks, oh, someone has understood. So, what do you want? What do you want from me? He's quoting Prabodhananda. Prabhupada is quoting Prabodhananda Saraswati. So then you say to him, having got his attention to him, having got his attention, you say to him that, my dear sir, you're such a wonderful, great person. Now you give up all your hogwash ideas and you surrender at the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So there may be some diplomatic dealings in devotional service. But here diplomacy means where one presents oneself as being a very great devotee. He may even present himself as being very humble, but internally be very proud. Or diplomatic dealings may also be to perform devotional service in a manner that one gets some material advantage. His aim is to have some material advantage. He poses himself as a great spiritualist so as to fool people and then gets donations. That's discussed a little later. So, kutinati, jibe hingshan, envy of others, is animal killing. Or envy has also been described by Prabhupada in one purport that envy means not to preach Krishna consciousness. If you have the means to deliver others but you don't, then that's also one form of envy. Just like if a doctor, he's at the scene of an accident and he has all his what do you call that, his tools or his medical equipment and his drugs with him, and he's able to treat the persons who are injured, but he doesn't, and he just sits and watches them die. He could be, I think he could be tried in court. At least he'd probably be thrown out of the medical association, because he has a duty. Having got that knowledge, he has a duty to preach to others. So if one doesn't, and that's one form of jiva hingshan, envy to others, then lab puja pratishta. Now we come into the more subtle lab, that's not very subtle, that in the name of devotional service, one is amassing a personal bank account. He's performing devotional service, but his aim is, maybe some devotion is there, but he's got some material aim also. That we have to be very careful of. The brahmanas traditionally in India, people would give them donations, and then for the temples, big lands were given, and the brahmanas would control that. So in the name of the deity, they'd be controlling so much wealth, and they'd be very wealthy people. And so there were so many arguments over succession. Who will be the next acharya in the sampradaya? Who, because you get rich. It's one way of getting rich quick, is to control some lands in the deity. So one has to be very careful. Even devotees collecting money, if they think, well, I collected so much money, so much, I deserve a percentage. Or if they think, well, I'm doing this service in the temple, but if I was doing the same thing in Kami life, I'd be earning so much money, so they should pay me. If they don't pay me, well, maybe I'll cream off a little myself. I'll take some myself. And that's colloquial English, though. Those who are not from England may not understand this. So these are all different kinds of maya. We think instead of giving to Krishna, yeah, I've given plenty to Krishna, and Krishna looks after his devotees, so yes, I should save Krishna the trouble and look after myself. These are various forms of maya. La puja pratishta is similar. That I should be worshipped, I should be honored. This is very dangerous. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has analyzed that. Even the gross desires for sense gratification may be easy to give up, but the desire for being honored and worshipped is very insidious and subtle. One may become addicted in joys. That naturally, if someone's performing devotional service, after some time someone may give some respect and honor, but that is a great intoxication. And it can be very subtle that one is enjoying that feeling that, yes, others are honoring me. It's very difficult to give up. But unless we give it up, then we don't get Krishna. And it all springs from this. It begins with bodily identification. That I am this body, I am this mind, I am this false ego, I am God. Others should honor me, others should respect me. Maya comes in so many subtle forms. At every moment, Maya is attacking us in various ways. We see that if anyone develops even a slight ability, a little bit more than others, then they tend to be somewhat proud of that. And then if they see someone else who's got that ability more than them, then they become envious of that other person. This is how Maya works. And even in devotional service, you shouldn't think that, well, I'm performing devotional service, therefore I'm free from Maya. As soon as we think that, then we're in trouble. As soon as we think I'm free from Maya, then we're definitely in Maya. We have a lot of problems. So this can come. Even if we're performing very nice service and we're sincere, we also always have to be checking ourselves. Otherwise, we may be saying, I'm the best pujari, I'm the best book distributor, I'm the best cook, whatever it may be. I'm the best this or that. Or even if we're not the best, we may be, then we may be the worst. And we may think that, well, I'm the worst. I'm the worst cook. See, no one cooks worse than me. You can make a joke out of it and enjoy that. Somehow trying to distinguish ourselves. Maya is so subtle. At one time, devotee said to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, I'm the most fallen. Prabhupada said, you're not the most anything, you're simply insignificant. you don't have any qualification. Then he may say, I'm the most insignificant. I'm the most fallen. I am the most fallen. No one is more fallen than me. On top of the list. Maya is very subtle, so we have to be very careful. What to do? Well, what should we do? Chant Hare Krishna and pray for the mercy of Krishna. What can we do? We have to pray for the mercy of Krishna. That mood of prayer, that can really help us. All the other things we should do, we must do. Perform sadhana, perform our service, don't moan, don't groan, go on in our service. But at the same time, we have to understand that even though we're doing all these things, and without doing these things, there's no question of advancing in Krishna consciousness. At the same time, we should understand that ultimately our advancement doesn't depend upon our own effort, but it depends upon the mercy of Krishna and the Vaishnavas. If we think that, well, I'm performing the best sadhana, then again, that becomes, of course, we should. And then another nonsense is to say, well, I don't want to be too proud of performing good sadhana, so I won't perform good sadhana. That's another nonsense. That we should do everything very nicely, perform our devotional duties. But at the same time, you have to be very, very careful that Maya doesn't keep up and take over our consciousness. So what can we do but pray to Krishna, and please save me. And all these activities that we're doing, sadhana, service, that's all simply to attract the mercy of Krishna. Ultimately, we're depending on the mercy of Krishna. But all these activities, they are to attract the mercy of Krishna. Otherwise, we're very weak before Maya. We're very small before Maya. We may think, well, I'm advancing, I'm so great. But Maya is very, very, very lenient. Maya is not really giving us any severe tests. What we may think are severe tests. Then you see how Maya tested Prahlad Maharaj, how Maya tested Chitraketu. Later we'll see how he was put in the body of a demon. Very difficult position. Maya, his great devotees, they're known as great devotees because they've crossed great tests of Maya. And everyone who is going to become a pure devotee, we have to cross many tests. And we shouldn't think that, yes, now I'm nicely situated. Because Maya has always got more and more tests. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, in the Brahminman purport, in Brahma Samhita, says that Krishna, or Maya, purifies the aspiring devotee by the fire of ordeal. We have to go through the test, we have to go through the fire. We have to become purified, burned. All the impurities have to be burned out, just like gold is purified by fire. So that has to be burned out. There's so many. We don't know how many desires are there within our heart, either manifested, not manifested. Maya can test in various ways. We haven't been subject to all the tests of Maya by any means. So we should never think that we are very, very strong, but always remember that we are, constitutionally we are weak. We are not strong. Sometimes we hear, they said, oh, such a strong devotee. What is strong devotee? Strong devotee means who thinks I am very, very weak, but takes shelter of Krishna by the process of devotional service. Otherwise, no one is strong before Maya. Maya is stronger than the living entity. We should always remember that. But we only get strength from, we can only get the strength to conquer Maya by the grace of Krishna. As the only means. Individually, we have no means. It's simply not possible. That's why even great yogis, meditators, they can't cross over Maya because they're trying by the wrong means. They can't get free. Even if they think they're free, they get liberated in the impersonal Brahman, but there's a thin line, thin but very strong line of Maya just waiting to pull them back down again. So we should consider what is the power of Maya and what is the nature of Maya. Maya is yaya samohito jiva, she who bewilders, samoha, completely bewilders the living being. And what is the nature of Maya? That simply suffering. Actually, what is the suffering? The suffering, the root of the suffering of Maya, the root nature of the suffering of Maya is that we are separated from Krishna. And all the other forms of suffering, adhyatmik, adhibhautik, adhidaivik, janma, mrityu, jara, vyadhi, the sufferings of Maya can be classified in various ways, although they are unlimited. But all these sufferings, they are simply symptomatic of the real suffering, and that we are separated from Krishna. And they're just to remind us that we are separated from Krishna. That is the actual suffering that the jiva undergoes. So here we are considering what is Maya. Maya means that which is not. And that which is, that which is true, is that we are the eternal servants of Krishna. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We have no duty or business. Prabhupada used to use this word a lot. The business of the condition of every soul is simply to serve Krishna. So these are all points that we've heard many times. We should go on hearing many times because we are constantly being attacked by Maya. We should hear again and again that we are not the body. We're the eternal servants of Krishna. We are meant to serve Krishna. We cannot be happy without serving Krishna. Our constitutional position is to serve Krishna because Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We are not supreme. That is our great illusion. We are eternally servants of Krishna and dependent upon Him. So, I think maybe the next few verses, yes, describes this, and we can go on hearing how we're not the body, we're eternal servants of Krishna. And simply recognizing this fact is the cause of our fortune. Our misfortunate position is caused simply because we have forgotten Krishna, and all good fortune comes simply by understanding. Jeev Krishna Das Ibishas Kalaita or Dukangai. Simply we have to understand that we are the Jiva, we are not God, we are the tiny living being dependent upon Krishna, the servant of Krishna, and of the body. Jeev Krishna Das Ibishas, simply have to understand this. And or Dukangai, there will be no more suffering. Hare Krishna. Any question or comment about this?
Maharaj, is there any benefit understanding you're not the body unless you do understand that you're Krishna's servant? Because people who understand themselves as having a character, they're not like a person, which isn't the body, but you understand.
Well, it's a preliminary understanding, but simply to understand that we're not the body, if we don't understand that we're the eternal servant of Krishna, that was discussing yesterday. People have theoretical knowledge of reincarnation. But they're addicted to sense gratification nevertheless, because they don't know that their real position is as a servant of Krishna. Or even if they understand that not the body and material life is suffering, without knowing that I'm the servant of Krishna, then they become impersonalists. So it's a preliminary understanding, but as I was, practically that was the main theme of the class yesterday, that even knowledge of reincarnation, although it's necessary, it's not in and of itself all in all. We also have to know that we are the eternal servant of Krishna. There's some other question there, please.
Maharaj, you said that the use of the commas in the preaching has some meaning and use, but what about
Oh yes. Oh yes. What about using diplomacy? Diplomacy in preaching is acceptable. What about diplomacy in dealing with devotees? Yes, that's also acceptable. Prabhupada regularly. So in so many ways, Prabhupada was praying. You Americans, most of his disciples were Americans, that you are leading the world. So you should lead the world with Krishna consciousness. In Britain, he would say that you are a great country, you have lost your empire, but actually your management is very good. You just take a little direction from me and you can lead the world again. Well, there are so many examples that there was one devotee in Mayapur who was troublesome just by his nature. Everyone was upset with him. And he used to go around playing his guitar, and no one liked that either. And they were asking Prabhupada if they could throw him out. Prabhupada called him and said that, "You are such a great guitar player. Why don't you go all over the world and preach Krishna consciousness playing your guitar?" Instead of throwing him out and telling him he was a nonsense, he inspired him. And the same result was achieved. So, yes, there's use. Diplomacy is... there's a use to it also. It can be used in Krishna's service. But then we have to be very fixed in our position. Otherwise, we have to be fixed in the position of serving Krishna. And the British are expert at diplomacy. Everything they say is, don't mind this. The middle classes especially, they're very expert in saying things in a very polite way. Americans can't understand it unless they've lived here for years. They say, "Oh, the British are so polite." But this is material diplomacy. But they're so polite. They're always saying thank you and please. But a British person who understands the subtleties knows that actually when American would be using all kinds of four letters words, the British person says, "Thank you very much. That means get the hell out of here." Depends on the tone. Depends on the tone of voice. So, in Rome, do as the Romans do. That's said in Sanskrit also. Yata deshe tatacha, something like that. According to the, you should behave according to the local culture. So, you can do also. Maybe necessary. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was warned against diplomatic behavior as a weed in devotional life. So when one presents himself as being something that he's not, or deals with people in a duplicitous way for some personal advantage, that is a weed in devotional life. So you have to be very, very careful. Practically, we can't live in this world, especially in the modern age, without some kind of diplomatic, at least diplomatic dealings, if not outright lies and bribery and so many things. If I'm going to go and, if someone's going to go and preach in some Muslim country and you come in the airport, "Why have you come here?" "Well, I come to preach Krishna consciousness." You don't say that. You have to say that. Oh, visit friends, holiday, whatever it may be. It's diplomatic. It's a lie. But for Krishna's service, you have to say.
Mentioned about fish. Is there someone in the Shastra that says about?
Yeah, in Manu says that. He lists all the different kinds of meat and how eating this is more sinful and eating this kind of meat is more sinful and more sinful and more sinful. And one who eats fish, he says at the end, he's eating all the other, it's like eating all the other kinds of meat. It's the lowest, it's the most sinful.
More than cows?
More
than
a
cow?
Cat?
Cows.
I'm not trying to make a joke. I just didn't understand what you said. I heard a doggy tease. Anything's possible. Yeah, according to Mano, yeah, that's what he says. He's the lowest of all. Some things are difficult to understand. Yeah, the British get so upset when they hear the French are eating horse meat. They get so upset. Oh, how bad. The horse is such a nice animal. Why should the French eat horses? See what bad people the French are. But, you know, they're eating pigs and chickens and cows. And they're eating horses. Oh, very bad. They're uncivilized. They have a whole concept of civilization. When the maggots are dropping off the pheasant, then you should eat it. That's very high class. Of course, I think they outlawed that now. This is Maya.
I've read in Srimad Bhagavatam, I don't remember now in which canto, but it explained how a fish actually on the lower, like...
It's the lowest species of life, most abominable. It's in the 8th canto where...
Where
Parikshit Maharaj asks Shukadev Goswami, he says that when Shukadev Goswami describes Matsya Avatar, so he says, well, the fish is the most abominable species and is always condemned and full of suffering. So how could the Supreme Lord become a fish? Yeah, so? It's a really low species. We see Jalajanava Lakshani, Stavara Lakshavimshati, there's the list of the different species of life. The first is given the aquatics and then the plants. It's considered in the chain of rebirth, the fish is considered the lowest position, lower than the plants, more suffering than the plants.
Does that include aquatic mammals?
I would presume so. Prabhupada used to refer to whales as fish. So the delineation of species, when Prabhupada says there are 8,400,000, when Shastra says, is not exactly according to the modern idea of what a species is. Similarly, when we talk of atoms, it's not exactly according to the word paramanu in Shastra, which means atom, is not exactly the same as what you'll get like in the periodic table. And what else is there? Species, atoms. There's something else I want to say. I can't remember just now. But the Vedic system of classification is not exactly the same as the modern scientific one. Jai Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Holiness Bhakti Vikas Swami Ki
Jai.